We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown, a very sacrificial audio version. As I'm out of town, so I'm recording on headphones. Don't usually do this very often. I think the last time, Andrew, you and I entertained the idea of not using a normal setup was the Browns' culmination victory over the Jets. So I don't know, kind of a revisiting a pretty good moment in last year's season. But obviously, welcome you in. Different state for me, but nonetheless, there's a lot to talk about, man. It's been a wild week of NFL and Browns coverage.
Yeah, free agency kind of stopped in terms of the new moves happening, but it's turned to like more off the field stuff, rule changes. The coach and the GM both spoke to the media down in Florida at the owners meetings. The owners spoke to the media and definitely used that opportunity to get some of their talking points out there. So yeah, lots of newsworthy items to run through.
I think you forget every year how much comes out when these guys get into a super comfortable setting at the owners' meetings. I think that is something I will never forget again, because again, with how the Browns sort of operate, they like to, if you get them with smaller groups, they seem to open up more, and not everybody travels down to those. So we get a lot of information. We'll start off with the time that Jimmy and Dee spent with the media. And again, not very many people there, largely covered by Mary Kay Cabot, who was the first to hit many of these things. The first is that there seems to be a not that it's done officially, but Kevin and Andrew have sort of like a looming imminent extension coming. And it was kind of vaguely placed, but I think that sort of vague nature is similar to what all of us have been saying this offseason, which is it's going to happen. And it might just be a little bit after the draft, right? Or when things cool down in the summer. But it's good to know from the people making those decisions that that sort of stability is going to remain in place, right?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I think it's one of the interesting things that I'll be watching is if they are tied together still, right? Because they were both hired with five-year contracts. They've both seen out four of those 5 years. We talked about earlier in the offseason, they almost have to extend them, because otherwise you're putting them in a what you would call a sort of a lame duck year going into the 24 season. So you have to do the extension now if you're going to do it. And it gives them security. But I do think it's an open question. And it may be that they are still connected and this is much ado about nothing. But if they were to come out and announce a five-year extension for Andrew Berry and a three-year extension for Kevin Stefanski, then I think that would be something worth reading into.
Yeah, definitely. A difference in timetable for those guys, or any difference in contract language, which it's pretty crazy that we get all of this information on player contracts, but coaching contracts are like totally left in the dark across the NFL. Even sometimes find yourself guessing about how many years some of these guys have, like the Freddie Kitchens contract. I remember everyone's like, how long is that contract going to be? It's always a little interesting what hits the media and what doesn't. And it's almost largely driven by what an agent wants to leak, because the NFL doesn't seem to require any of that stuff hitting the main sort of web pages.
Yeah, they do a very good job of keeping this stuff secret. And the Browns are at the top of that list of teams that want this stuff to be completely hidden for the most part. So right. What I would expect is that in the month, say the month after it happened, somewhere in there, you would get a little bit more detail on the thought process from the team and exactly what they see. But I mean, the comments from Jimmy and Dee Hazel made it, pretty clear that this is a this is a kind of a done deal, you know, and
right.
Haslam's quote was, we're in the process of working through things so that Kevin and Andrew would be with us for an extended period of time. So this is not just get a deal done to extend this a few years. They are, I think, very committed to this group, and I think they will demonstrate that with these extensions.
And I think that if you were to get any details on it, it'll come from like a Charles Robinson podcast, like 40 minutes into a podcast where he just sort of flippantly says something. This is obviously something we will keep an eye on, but I don't think it's going to come from like Schefter or any of the big names. It'll come from somebody that is a little more hidden in that world. So listen, obviously great news around keeping those two guys around, keeping stability. And I think it's encouraging that Jimmy continues to see the value in that stability. Obviously, two of the three times to the playoffs in their return have come since 2020. It's not a hard decision to make here, quite frankly. But I do think that you take for granted some of those decisions that the Browns are able to screw up over the years. And to get this one right, I think, is obviously encouraging. Now, the biggest decision of all, Andrew, is a stadium buzz that continues to grow. They had outwardly admitted that they're at least in the process of buying this land or have a chance to buy this land. The language is a little weird, but the Brook Park land was confirmed to be at least of close buying interest.
Yeah, I think the phrase here is that they have a contract in place. So what that essentially means is that they have agreed to terms, but they don't want to do that unless they are going to use it. So the contract part of this is essentially that the purchase hasn't been completed specifically because they are using it as leverage with the city, but also because they want, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but I think the way that they laid it out at the owners' meetings is essentially they have given a list of things to the city that they want from the stadium that exists. And I think the stadium site currently cannot support their list of, you could say, demands or desires either way. And so that basically they're going to hold off buying this Brook Park land until, from a PR perspective, they have kind of cleared the path so that they've said they've exhausted all their options with the city. And then they execute that contract with the option to buy and move forward with that sale. And then things go from there.
Yeah, the $1 billion number's thrown around for renovations. And it's like, if you're throwing $1 billion around for renovations, you might as well just come up with another way, whatever that way is, to get another billion and make something more long standing that matters, right? Wherever it is. I don't know, Andrew, what's your gut tell you, man? Because to me, it tells me they're going to Brook Park. Like, they're putting on this front. They're trying to act like they're doing all they can to keep it on the lakefront. And they're going to ultimately shift that blame away from themselves.
Right.
And they're going to build like a Browns town that we talked about in Brook Park that's close to their facility, and they'll make it. And people might not care. You complain and you're mad and all that, and then you step inside a dome and you're like, huh, this is actually pretty nice. But ultimately, I think that's where it's going. I don't know if you agree with me, but I feel like it's a front.
No, I agree 100%. I think there was another article from the Northeast Ohio Transportation blog or whatever it's called that has broken a lot of the stadium news. And they essentially said that the Browns want things in terms of being in control of parking revenue and things like that, that the city is not willing to give them with the current downtown site, not to mention the dome thing, which is obviously the biggest prize here. The issue is, no matter what you do at the lakefront, you cannot build a dome because the site is basically built on the lake. And so it can't, from what I understand, cannot hold the weight of a dome. So you're going to have to, if you want to build a dome, you got to build it somewhere else. There's that talk about that other site downtown. I don't think that's going to happen for whatever reason, probably because the Haslams, to be honest with you, prefer the larger acreage connected to the Brook Park site and the fact that it's closer to Berea. And so I think that's the direction they're pushing. It's just a matter of, like you said, they're trying to do this in a way so that they don't appear to be the villains, because what they don't want to do is alienate the county or the state of Ohio into not supporting, because even though they're going to do this in Brook Park, and it's going to be a ton of money, they're still going to want the state and the county to chip in, even if the city can't.
I totally agree. How the money is raised and all of that is probably going to be really tricky and something that we're going to have to read rather than originally think about. But like, it's just posturing. It feels like a bunch of posturing to get what they want. Ultimately, it's in Brook Park. And again, I'm not here to even say, I think it's a fine idea. I think it's, many teams play outside of the city that they're labeled to. Many teams have gone from outdoor, again, air quotes here around this phrase, weather advantage environments, and they play in a dome. And you know the people who really love that? The fans, because it's a really comfortable place to watch a football game, and it would make your situation in this division also a unique thing that nobody else is doing. So I'm not saying that it's like The same as having like a bunch of hardened 1960s warriors who are used to playing in the frozen tundra. But this isn't the same, man. You're drafting guys from all over the country, and they're not built the same way you were wired as a Browns fan, hardened over 30 years, sitting in the cold. It just doesn't work that way anymore. But a dome, I'm telling you, man, and Andrew, you know this as well as I do, the noise in those places can be deafening. And if you fill it with 95% Browns fans, it is going to be perhaps, Andrew, the first real home field advantage they have actually had in a significant amount of time.
Yeah, I think that's the path. I think that's the plan. They have already, it's been reported, are talking to the architects that put together the Viking Stadium, which is one of the louder stadiums in the NFL. The other thing, I'm just reading through Jimmy Haslam's quotes here. The other thing that definitely jumps out and I think is worth repeating for folks, he says, we have potentially two really good options, a major remodel of where we are now or build a new dome stadium. They're both very hard to work out. We're going to pursue them both. And sometime in the next year or two, we'll say, okay, here's the direction we're going. And I think the reason that that's important is because the lease at the stadium in downtown is up, I think, after it's the 28th season when that's up. I don't know if it's the end of the season or the beginning, but right, that's soon. But if their timeline is the next year or two to make this decision, potentially the new stadium could be on track to be open for 29. That's how soon this could all happen.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We at the OBR are proud to once again be sponsored by Game Time Ticket Application. It is one of the best on the market where buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't feel stressful, and they don't feel stressful. It's a quick and easy process to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, anything you want for any event near you. Game Time has you covered. They have killer deals all throughout the process, including last-minute tickets with the best price guarantee. You can stop stressing over the availability and price of those tickets and just start looking forward to your event. I know that's how it was for us. My wife really wanted some Justin Timberlake concerts for her birthday. I went to Game Time. Easy process. Lets you look at the seating map, figure out where you can sit, have the view from the seats. They showed some flash deals that were available to get the best price, and that price was guaranteed even for event cancellation, job loss protection, all the above. Great seats for the concert. Made me a hero in the household. I'm telling you guys, Game Time is the place for the last minute ticket deals, or even if you're planning way out in advance, they have deals going on all the time. Like I said, those exclusive flash deals for any game you care about, concert you care about, theater experience, whatever. You have that Game Time guarantee, which means you'll get that assurance for the best price available for those tickets. If you find a better seat, better price for less, they'll credit you 110% of the difference there, guys. That's important. So grab your Game Time tickets today. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code OBR for $20 off. Download that Game Time app today or go to gametime.co to take advantage of the last minute tickets you can find at the lowest price guaranteed.
It sounds far off in your mind, but it's already 2024. I have to remind myself it's not like 2021 anymore. It'll be here before we know it. And I know that some of you will hate it because you're purists and you got all this nostalgia for the area and all. I get it. I totally get it. But I do think you can also come to love indoor football in a place that I think you can make your own and make a new set of memories, right? I think it's all going to work out. You're going to still love the Cleveland Browns and they're going to play in a pretty unique place. If you look at that, like you, Andrew, noted, the Viking Stadium, that place is awesome. It's flat out awesome, and it'll bring a lot of interesting stuff outside of football to that area as well. So should again, I have no doubt that it'll ultimately be fine. Let's move on. So Kevin, I think Stefanski was the next one to talk. Andrew, he spoke about Vrabel, which is something we wanted to hear from him specifically, because obviously there's like a bunch of eyebrows raised about who's making that decision, the he or the why. And again, it's not to say Kevin couldn't map out some sort of answer for this that works, even if he wasn't like directly involved. But if, I mean, the continuity, the working together, and the stuff he's always said, and I have no reason to believe that he wasn't at the forefront of being involved in bringing Vrabel over. And I don't think Kevin has the ego that would ever stop that from happening. And to me, would see the advantages. So if you want to read that quote, Andrew, I think it's a pretty good one about their reasons for bringing Vrabel over and all that.
Well, he's already calling him Vrabes. That's first, right? It's not Vrabel. It's not Mike. Yeah. It's Vrabes. So that's number one. Obviously, you know, as close as they can be already. He said, "We're very excited to get Vrabes up there. I can tell you having him in and throwing a brown sweatshirt on was a big deal for me. Get the kid back up to Northeast Ohio. I feel really strongly about the person and the coach. I've developed a relationship with Vrabes over the years, Andrew as well." So yeah, it sounds like this was Kevin Stefanski driving this, which is, you know, I think definitely contrary to the perception when it was announced. And I think it really speaks to where Kevin feels like he stands with the organization, but also understanding that he doesn't have all the answers, which is something that I think we've really seen this year, Jake, more than any since Stefanski's been the head coach. We were surprised this time last year at how little new thinking came into the building with the, you know, knowing that they had the full season of Deshaun Watson coming, or at least we thought they did, that they would change things. And they really just added Bill Musgrave into a consultant role. It felt kind of stale. This season has been the exact opposite of that. And I don't fully understand what the change was.
Yeah,
it might just be as simple as the Browns weren't very good on offense last year. And Stefanski realizes they have to change, or they're going to get left in the dust a little bit. I don't know, but it definitely has changed. And adding all of the names on offense that we've already talked about, and then Mike Vrabel on top of that, tells you how serious he is about adding new outside voices.
Well, it's also true to, like, you and I not only talking about this from last year, they overhauled the defense, the Schwartz hire, all that came with that. But we talked about how they didn't do anything to the offense. Well, this year, obviously, we have broken down extensively what the defense did really well, but we also noted that there's obviously a piece of the paper that is wet and can be poked through here. And like, how do they fix that? Bringing in Vrabel, who's quite clearly one of the better defensive minds in terms of how to work that side of the football throughout the course of his NFL career, can help provide perspective there. Maybe even bring over some of the things that Vrabel left behind in Tennessee from a secondary perspective. So encouraging to me, Andrew, that obviously you get a bunch of the leadership, build a team, build the us over me mentality that I think Vrabel has done. I mean, I'm not saying he's at the Tomlin Belichick level, but it's in terms of like coaches in their 40s going in that direction, he's there. He's quite clearly there in terms of being the next of that mold. He will get a head coaching job again in the next few years, getting his perspective on how he handles a lot of those situations on top of, like, you know, I know maybe Jim hasn't been talked about as a forefront of the hire, but he's going to be there involved. I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to be involved in those conversations, right? So, like, I'm excited about what Vrabel can possibly bring to that defense, where we're talking about they didn't add any minds on that side. Well, Vrabel's a pretty good mind.
I think that's absolutely right. It's the coaching, it's the head coaching stuff that he brings, and then the defensive stuff. It's both. And I really don't think that there is a, I mean, I said this when they announced it, I think I'm more excited about this even than I would have been if Bill Belichick was this name. So I think it's really the perfect fit for what the Browns need. And I'm very excited for, you know, maybe it ends up being nothing and we don't really see the impact, but I have to believe with somebody that was, I think, pretty well known in Tennessee for having a very strong voice, it would be surprising to me if Mike Vrabel didn't have some some strong opinions about things the Browns should do.
To say that players respected him and he was a leadership type of head coach is I think, putting that at a very minimum. So if nothing else, I hope that he can provide some of those angles for the group collectively and, like, give them a chance to learn from some of the things he did. Because Vrabel wasn't fired because he can't coach. He was fired because he lost a battle with ownership about who to listen to. And the GM was the guy that they went with, and they decided to part ways with Vrabel. It's not that the guy can't get it done. It's not that he can't get players to respect him. All of those things are very still evident. You hear from guys who recently played for him. It's not hard to imagine that, again, that guy's taking a job in the next few years. There's not a doubt in my mind. Last thing on Kevin, he did talk about flying Ken Dorsey out, spending time with him and Deshaun. And, like, there's some good stuff there about, I know he's not ready to make a play caller choice. I mean, I imagine that decision's made, Andrew. It's all sort of a front. But again, good stuff here, I think, about getting time with those guys, and especially Dorsey getting some time out there with Deshaun, because that relationship obviously is imperative to their success.
Yeah, so apparently it was Stefanski and Dorsey that both went out there. I think that their CBA sort of prohibits them from talking football directly, but they did spend some time with him, and they had their head athletic trainer out there supervising his throwing, so I think they obviously just wanted to really get a handle on where he was at with things. And then, Stefanski also mentioned that they're back in the building in April. So it's not too much longer until players are back in Berea for some of this offseason work. So we'll see that happening too. And he did say he's in a great place physically. He's doing a great job with his rehab. Really, it was more of me checking in with him and starting to develop a relationship with Ken that was really the most important part. So that gives you a little picture of what was going on there.
Yeah, everything that we talk about here, all the things around the organization, all it hinges on is Deshaun Watson playing really good football again. That's the crux of fighting for the playoffs or having a real chance at a Super Bowl. So everything rides on it, and we'll continue to talk about it in the nature which it deserves. Okay, let's close with a couple things. Andrew Berry spends time talking about Nick Chubb. I think he dropped some really important information about where Nick is. We know the Browns have added a fourth running back. A little bit of the conversation on that fourth running back is, like, this kick return stuff, which we are going to break down the rules changes in the coming days, guys, and talk about those and what we think of them. But there's no doubt that Nyheim Hines is a big part of their kickoff route. They knew that was coming. That's a part of it. Pursued him heavily. But we do see four running backs in the current stable of rotations, rotational guys. And, like, I'm interested in where Chubb will be. I'm hearing him. Actually, let's do this. Andrew, give the quote that you have or what he said about Nick, and then we'll talk about what we think the course of action will ultimately become as the season gets close.
Yeah, there's a lot here. He said, honestly, it's probably too early to really understand what he's going to look like. He's doing truly a fantastic job with the rehab, and he should start to load run probably sometime this upcoming month. He said that he's right now he's working on strengthening, doing the rehab, those sorts of things, but he's not doing sprints and agility drills yet, but he will start to do that in the next month, I guess. And so he said, as we think about it, until we see him in the next couple of months, I think the next, call it 3 months, will be pretty telling in terms of his potential readiness for the season, for early in the season, rather. So he said, we're going to be conservative in terms of our approach and our assessment with building the roster because he's coming off of a major knee injury. But I also do also have to give him a lot of credit. He's done a really, really nice job, but we'll have a better sense in the future. If you ask me that question around the draft, he may be able to give a little bit more of a specific answer, which, yeah, right, don't hold your breath.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I think, Andrew, my hunch is, complete hunch, they are going to draft a back in some capacity in these picks they have, whether that's sliding back a little bit and creating another pick. I do expect them to take one. And quite frankly, I would not want Nick rushed back early in the season. They don't need that. And I think that the idea of being 7-3, 7-4, something like that, and then getting Nick Chubb back for the sprint to the finish line in the playoffs, honestly, would be a pretty exciting thing, because we saw that. Like, think about, like, Aaron Jones for the Packers last year, where he's sort of beat up throughout, and then he comes back late in the year strong, and you're like, that guy's moving, man. Like, is there a world where Nick, obviously coming back, you need to play some on that knee and get to trusting it again, but, like, I would be excited about the idea of getting Nick back in the second half of the year, not putting the week one through week 8-9 bruises on that body, that strain on that knee. And I think that that's the way it'll ultimately play out. And they're building depth to do that.
Definitely. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, ad nauseum as we get closer to the season and kind of talk about how the season's going to go. The reality, Jake, is that they shouldn't need Nick Chubb to win games, right? They've got the quarterback that they've got. They've completely retooled the offense. They've added another wide receiver. They're obviously moving this team towards a pass-heavy, pass-first offense, which, to be perfectly honest with you, a committee-back approach like Nyheim Hines, Jerome Ford, and Deontay Foreman actually work better with than a sort of 25, 30 carry a game back like Nick Chubb. So they've built this thing in a way that they should be able to survive half a season without Chubb. And then, as you said, he becomes your ace in the hole down the stretch of the season and into the playoffs, where you're kind of, you've got the freshest Nick Chubb that you've got since college, and he's just battering teams into submission. That's the dream.
That would be a fantastic outcome. And I think with Nick's return, it's all about painting expectations. And if you're looking at week one on those expectations, I mean, that, again, one of the more grueling knee injuries that you will see. And don't use similar, you know, labels of it was someone torn AC on their back in 8 months. That's just not realistic, man. It's just not realistic because it's way more complicated. So just wanted to remind you guys of that. Another thing that came from Andrew Berry was the extension of Amari Cooper. I know that most people, Andrew, have wrote off an idea of a future with Amari because of the Jerry Jeudy contract. But when you look at Jerry Jeudy's cap hits, there's a world in which this can be built out for those guys to stay together for a couple of years here early on. And me personally, really hoping that. I know Jack Duffin put out some little projections of what he thinks it could be, and that's always worth taking a look at. But boy, I just would really like the idea of keeping Amari at least through 2025. That would be a thing. That would just be a great outcome because he doesn't have any guarantees this year. So to me, like, tacking on another year would be a really good outcome and burying in some sort of guarantees to help him feel good about this year too, you know?
Yes, I think for Cooper and actually for Chubb, I meant to mention this when talking about Chubb, the expectation from, I think, reading between the lines of the articles that came out of the owners' meetings was that they are still going to redo Chubb's deal at some point. They expect to do that. I think they might be, in reading about Cooper, Mary Kay Cabot mentions that they might not extend Cooper until after the draft. And so I think it might just be as simple as kind of holding on to some of the team business, and that might include the extensions for the GM and the head coach for after the draft when things are a little bit less busy, right? So, but I agree with you. I think adding in some guarantees for this year and next year, and then making potentially like a team option essentially for that third year would be probably the wise way to go about this, and makes a ton of sense in terms of protecting yourself against the rising cost of wide receivers and the fact that if the season this year goes as the Browns expect, they're going to have a pick in the high 20s, right? So you're not necessarily going to be able to be in a position to pick like a number one wide receiver, a true difference maker next year in the draft either, even if that's where you want to go. And we all know now what type of player is not available in free agency. So it seems like one way you could protect yourself would be by extending Cooper, giving yourself a few more years to identify a player in the draft and develop them over the course of a few seasons.
Yeah, the right year to take a swing on somebody in the mid-20s where the Browns are picking at wide receiver would be, ironically, this year. We don't know what the wide receiver class will look like next year, but I can tell you it's very unlikely. Even though wide receiver classes in general are going to continue to be strong as more and more young men come through the ranks playing wide receiver, learning the nuances earlier and earlier in a pass-heavy college world, but this year is it's not like this every year. So it's hard to sit here and bank on, like Andrew said, having a pick in the 20s and feeling like, oh, we're going to land the next – whoever, right? Like that's tricky to project. So yeah, they need to. And again, you're also worried about just even whatever the type of year Jerry Jeudy has, thrusting him on to like, hey, lead our wide receiver room flat out. You got to do it. You got to get 160 targets and you got to convert this number. And like, this is what we're expecting from you. And he could have a great year, but that's tough to peg down as like, that's going to happen. So we'll be interested to see if they get that deal done. And I think we would all agree that keeping Amari Cooper around for another year would be nice. The last piece of information we want to hit on before we get out the door is this Brazil update. So we had Maurice Hurst, like we thought, drop a nugget like 2 weeks ago. He's like, I don't know, I just said something. And that's the last thing that
he's trying to speak it into existence, man. He's thinking about spending a week in Brazil after training camp before the season starts. That's what he's thinking about.
And I don't blame him. So
no, it's a genius move.
The thing that we did learn is that the Browns are in the final running here, I guess. So it's them or the Packers. And I can see, Andrew, I can see either way going, either team getting it. But I kind of lean toward the NFL preferring to keep Green Bay and Philly in the country, is where I lean. I think that they, I actually am not doing any sort of homerism here and saying that I do think the Browns ultimately get to take that game because it'll be a pretty good audience for the streaming services. And I actually think they want that NFC tilt to probably be like an in-country primetime Packers Philly type of deal.
Well, it's more fair to the Eagles too. If you've got a conference game that could very well affect seeding,
well said.
You don't want to give that home game away, so to speak, and go to Brazil. I think a non-conference game against a team that you know the teams are friendly. Obviously, a lot of connections between the front offices. They should be able to coordinate very easily in terms of making this like putting it on as a spectacle, even though it is a regular season football game. So, I tend to agree with you, Jake. But I think that I'm sure that there are logistical reasons why, you know, from a scheduling standpoint, they're probably starting to look at making the schedule and trying to decide which one gives them more options for the rest of the season. So,
yeah,
I think if I had to place a bet, I would bet it being the Browns. But this is another great example of like how these guys get to Florida, and I don't know if there's just an open bar or something, but the Packers CEO is just like, yeah, it's us or the Browns. You know, it's like people have been speculating about this for 2 months, and he's just, yeah, it's us or the Browns. Everybody knows
that. I do think that's a part of it. They get down there, there's less media, they're around all their other buddies.
Right.
And they get a little sauced up.
They're just kind of talking, yeah.
Yeah, a little sauced up, and they're like, you know, here's some info. Take that or leave it.
Let me give you the straight dope.
That's right, man. I do think, I do want to ask you on the way out the door here. Last time the Browns opened with the Eagles, big moment happened. Do you recall?
Oh, that's a good one. You have stumped me.
It involves
a helicopter. Is that what you said?
It does.
Was that the return of Josh Gordon?
No, Josh McCown in the end zone helicopter fumble.
Oh God.
That was the opener. That was the Carson Wentz debut game.
Yeah. That's right. What was that, like 17? Yeah.
It was the Browns passed on Carson Wentz. He starts that game
So 2016.
Yes, and then we got McCown going diving into the end zone and getting absolutely
right leveled,
fully rotated. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was the year they went 1-15, and then they went 0-16 the next year. So
yeah, found a way to talk.
That was the beginning of the end.
Yeah, right. The beginning of the end. The whole God that was. I don't even like just remove it from our minds. It's over. Yeah. But I will never forget the football flying out of his arms, helicoptering his way into the end zone.
Yeah, so. He's just trying to make a play.
Browns at Eagles week one. Let's have that happen in Brazil. That's where we'll say it. So, all right, Andrew, good show, man. Appreciate you taking some time as schedules get a little chaotic, man, and covering a lot of this. And we'll be back, obviously, to cover, hopefully get back to Ohio and produce a little bit better audio volume levels here and go through the rule changes. We want to talk so much about this kickoff. There's a lot of elements to it. We're excited to talk a little bit more about the hip swivel tackle stuff. And The NFL did some good stuff with rosters, which I think we're excited to speak on a little bit. And then obviously did some good stuff with like common sense rules, the challenge rule and the ability to like have the replay official take a look at game time on the clock and then the quarterback stuff, which we thought got away. So, yeah, a lot of the stuff we predicted came through, but not surprised the 4th-and-21. We're not quite there. Maybe a couple years away, but the NFL will get there. I actually do genuinely think they'll get there. But we're going to break all that down and more. Coming at you in the next few days. Sorry we had to take a day off there, but we'll get it right. We'll continue to break down all this stuff, talk about your Browns in every way we can. Rate and review the podcast, please, and thank you for that as you continue to do it. It's great for us. It's great for Browns fans. Thank you for doing that. And again, we'll be back for your next podcast here on Friday, so check early Friday morning for that. Guys, appreciate you being here, making this a part of your day. Be well. Go Browns.